Hello and welcome to Partners for Progressive Israel podcast. Once again, I'm your host Nicole Cooper, recording out of Jerusalem. This is a part two follow-up episode about an action that happened in Susia in the South Hebron Hills in Palestine this past weekend of June 12th and 13th. The action was organized with the group All That's Left. This is a group of diasporic Jews who are unequivocally opposed to the occupation and work within the diasporic angle of resistance. They're committed to nonviolence and have done several actions over the last 3 years. This is the biggest action they've organized. It's also unprecedented in any activist memory here to have so many people come to a village overnight and do work, but especially have diasporic Jews do it. I want to make this podcast to clarify some things that happened there and how people felt about it. Some of the articles that were written about us, we felt a little wary of, so this is right from the horse's mouth. But it's also to give listeners a sense of all the nuances of the conflict here. Like I've written before, it's not just an us and them scenario, but there are so many beautiful little things that happen in between. They seem to fall through the cracks. They don't get to Western media. Up until now, since we've had over 6,000 views of articles and possibly 10,000 more views of general Facebook activity and different things around this action, there really isn't much writing about Jews going to Palestine to do work there and be in solidarity with residents of the village.
Which definitely does happen. The other main organizing group of this weekend is Ta'ayush, an Israeli group that has been going to South Hebron Hills for over a decade. They describe themselves as Israelis and Palestinians striving together to end the Israeli occupation and to achieve full civil equality through daily nonviolent direct action.
One of the best things I've learned in my 4 months here, 4 months used very well, of traveling all over the West Bank and traveling around Israel and meeting people constantly and constantly dealing with issues every single day, is that there's so many small, meaningful relationships here. Relationships between kibbutzniks and people in Gaza, relationships between Palestinians and Israelis, between diasporic Jews and Bedouins in recognized villages, between rabbis for human rights and Bedouins in unrecognized villages. People manage to have a lot of hope in a dark and gloomy place. And this, I think, is one of those strange relationships. A group of Jews coming to stand in solidarity with a village that has a demolition order from another group of Jews. It's a very strange feeling, but one that we held together and dealt with together and are still dealing with together. We were invited by the people of Susia to come there to celebrate our culture and to stand in solidarity. They welcomed us, welcomed our Judaism, whether it be secular or religious, as people held a Kabbalat Shabbat. For all the facts and figures and background information of what's happening in Susia, check out the last episode. This one is more about how people felt about it and what happened. Okay, so I'm here with someone who participated in the action the past weekend in Susia. He's going to just tell us quickly who he is, what he's doing here, and what motivated him to go to Susia.
Sure. My name is Sho. I was interested in a large group of diaspora Jews to go participate in a solidarity event, a practical one, to make a tangible difference for some Palestinian village in Area C of the West Bank.
In what ways was this practical compared to other actions you've been to or heard of?
This was actually my first one, so I can't compare very far, but this particular solidarity action seemed practical and also something that I could do without very specialized skills. So that was a simple building of a rather simple road and some basic agriculture, planting time.
And what was your overall impression of the weekend or something you've highlighted and took away with you?
Through this experience, I realized that as a diaspora Jew, I don't have deep and close-knit connections with, let's say, Israeli communities. So it's easier for me to cross lines, you can say, and I don't have to face pressure about where I'm going and, or less pressure about where I'm going and why. And I think that's an important way for people to just go to different parts of the West Bank and bring back human stories to the mainstream Israeli communities and also various diaspora communities around the world.
For you, what is the diaspora angle of resistance?
For me, the diaspora angle of resistance, for me personally, is to be open to the, let's say, mainstream Israeli wishes and needs, but also be authentic and to and hear, turn an ear to Palestinian suffering and also the acute needs that they have, and keep both very present in my mind and heart.
Why do you think it's important for American Jews to participate and sort of be active in anti-occupation work in Israel?
I think that the United States, because the United States supports Israel in many different ways, in many, some can argue, partial ways, it's important for American Jews to break the quite common image of the American government and American people supporting Israel excessively, and important for American Jews to, if they can't influence top-down policy very much, it's important for them to demonstrate grassroots solidarity, which also has practical benefits for the Palestinian people and for the positive effects, hopefully, toward the resolution of the conflict.
I also think there's a lot of strength to be had at a united, progressive Jewish voice outside of Israel. Like, if the diasporic Jews can get together who share similar interests and have a strong stance, that would be really beneficial as far as resisting the actions of the state that people don't necessarily agree with.
I agree.
That was Sho. He has been living in Jerusalem for about 4 months and has visited the country every year for about 15 years, as half of his family is Israeli. The next person I had a short conversation with is Rachel, who is visiting from the USA.
Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
We're just going to do a quick follow-up with you about what you thought about your weekend in the Palestinian village of Sousia, and who you are and what brought you here and your overall impression of the weekend.
Great. Well, I came here to finish up my degree at the University of Florida. I was missing one class and my department let me take it in Israel, so I said, why not? And I was really excited to continue exploring the nuances of the conflict. I had the opportunity to do my senior thesis on the Arab-Israeli school system, and so I did a thesis that was pertinent to the conflict, and since I've been here, I've been trying to hear as many firsthand testimonials as possible. So I had the opportunity to take a tour called Extend that is supposed to be an alternative learning experience following Tugli and Birthright, and on that trip, I learned about the action trip to Sousia. And what I liked about the trip to Sousia, in comparison to other actions, was its intentional and sustainable approach to acting as a partner for peace. I think that's definitely been something that's held me back from participating in other forms of activism in the past. And I also think that it gives students and people who wouldn't normally subject themselves to this sort of, to like the dangers of more radical activism, the opportunity to make a difference in combating the occupation.
It is a very kind of safe environment to go and learn, and I think it's more nurturing than it is, you know, an adrenaline-filled style of activism. Like, it's like, okay, we're just going to move this rock and put it here, and that can help people build an Area C, because it's not necessarily possible for people to do that in a way, you know, where you think you can get a whole day of building done, like, I would imagine, anyways.
Yeah. Right, definitely. And I also felt like it was a much more positive activism.
Mm-hmm.
Having the same sort of energy at a more radical event, I think, would be difficult.
Mm-hmm. And what was your opinion about sort of the American Jewry, some who've made Aliyah and some who are here just briefly, coming to do this work in the South Hebron Hills?
From my personal point of view, and from the points of view of a lot of people I had the opportunity to speak with, there is both a sense of pride and a sense of guilt. A sense of pride because definitely a lot of cool things were accomplished building a road that helped connect a number of villages to have more access to healthcare and to resources felt really nice. Creating a bond with the residents of Susia was a really cool opportunity also. And there was legal action taken on behalf of a resident of Susia against a settler who was harassing the resident.
So we'll just take a moment here to explain what happened. Earlier in the day on Saturday, the second day of the 2 day and one evening action, a couple of settler kids were on one hill, and then we all ran out to go see, make sure Nasser was okay because he was in his land, and then we all went back and did some workshops, and then fortunately for us, as the group reconvened into one larger group, and there's probably approximately 50 of us, then another kind of act of harassment happened. And do you want to explain the step-by-step of that?
So Nasser Kin confronted the settlers. He had a camera, which was provided to him by B'Tselem. And, you know, he was like, hey, stop chopping down my olive trees. And the settler responded by throwing stones at Nasser, one of which at least hit Nasser, one which almost hit the soldier who was nearby. And because we had a human rights lawyer with us, we had the opportunity for Nasser to not only show his footage to the Israeli police force that responded, but also with a group of, I want to say 30 of the participants of the All That's Left Collective in Taiyush, standing in solidarity from several hundred feet away. The human rights lawyer was able to demand an investigation on behalf of Nasser, and we later discovered that the settler had been arrested, which is definitely a rare occurrence from my experience.
Unfortunately, the settler will probably be released very quickly. However, it probably would have had a different outcome. Maybe we could say, I actually don't know, that'd be a grand assumption on my part, that it would have been a different outcome if we weren't there and if the lawyer wasn't there.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So that may or may not have been a victory on behalf of All That's Left. But then again, there was, from myself and from several other participants that I spoke to, a sense of guilt.
What's the guilt?
So sort of coming from a place of privilege and, you know, coming from an area where we're visiting, I heard several people describe staying overnight in Susia as camping, but there is also the reality that, you know, that's someone's life and, like, is this cultural appropriation? Where is our place in this? But then the alternative is not participating and not having an active voice and standing by and watching people have a really awful outcome. So it's definitely been grappling with, like, that sense of guilt and trying to balance it out with, I guess, a sense of righteousness and hope.
Yeah, on the note of the camping feeling, so we were all, you know, with our sleeping bags and, like, sleeping outside, like, oh, yeah, sleep outside, and it is great, and the residents there don't sleep outside, so it is kind of a novelty in that sense, but I was also kept thinking about how everyone's like, oh, it's so beautiful here, but the people, you know, do they want to be living in shacks and, like, tent-style houses? Like, that's all they can do. Like, do they think that that's beautiful, and we're kind of almost fetishizing it in a way? Oh, yeah, we see it's pretty, and maybe people were talking about the landscape and the agricultural fields being beautiful, but I also have a feeling that they were trying to not judge the buildings in a way to almost beautify them, to feel like they're not being
condescending,
urbanizing, westernizing, colonial, like, you know, just all these kinds of feelings, and I keep that kind of sitting with me for a while. It's like, what are the residents of Susia, like, what would they actually, how would their village look like? Would they still just, I'm assuming they maybe would want to be back in the caves. Caves are awesome, by the way, for anyone who's listening, like, in America, like, they're the perfect thing. If you're in the desert, they stay cold during the day, they're hot when it's cold out, they're a really lovely space, you can run electricity into a cave. So yes, I do know that they tried to go back to their caves at one point, but the IDF had covered them. This is about 30 years ago. So is that what they would want? Are they okay with their buildings like this? I don't know, and I don't know what we're imposing onto that.
And that's another layer, I think, of the guilt, is not knowing Arabic fluently.
To be fair, the people that organized do speak Arabic and Hebrew, as well as the residents of Susia. So there was definitely some straightforward communication about the needs of the village.
And we were invited, and there is a lot of communication and a lot of genuine bonding that happened. Like, I wouldn't say it was a surface level bonding with everyone. I mean, there's definitely some communication that was more just about body language and smiles, and some that was authentic, like real actual discussions happening in Arabic, or a lot of the residents do know English and could speak some to fluent English enough to express themselves. But yeah, this is a very layered, complex thing, especially because there is about 70 people who pass through the whole weekend. So it's a lot of different experiences and a lot of people bringing different knowledge to the table.
Right. But on the whole, from my personal point of view, it was a beautiful beginning to a truly sustainable form of action that I'm really excited to take part of in the future.
Great. Well, thank you for your thoughts. Is there any last thought? I mean, that seemed like a pretty good last thought to me.
Yeah, that was my last thought, I think. Yeah. It pretty much summed it up. It was a great introduction to this really cool community.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On Saturday morning, a few participants and myself worked with the locals to develop banners for the village. The hope is that the banners will last for several months and they can have them up for a long time, but the hope is also twofold in that we hope that the banners being in English and with a good message will reach out to all the internationals who pass by and sort of as a signal to those who might see photos in the media that people care and people in the diaspora care and have been there. The one banner is quite large, painted in acrylic paint with an olive tree and says Stand with Susia. The other banner is a bit smaller and painted in black letters and says Susia will never die. And at the bottom, the same thing is said in Arabic and written in purple. The kids of Susia helped us paint it and it was a little bit messy, but it was definitely successful. Other folks are off in the hot sun planting za'atar and building the road, whereas myself and two others got to stay in the cool shade and make these beautiful banners. After our lunch, we split off into groups of our choice to go do workshops with the locals. There's a workshop on beekeeping and Susia honey, a workshop on how to grow za'atar, a workshop on Jewish learning, reading Jewish texts, led by some of the members of All That's Left, and a workshop on the Women's Empowerment Center. I chose to go to the workshop on women's empowerment. Women in the village of Susia started a cooperative with women in other villages in the surrounding area in the South Hebron Hills. Its focus is around teaching embroidery as a tool for reclaiming the patterns and as a way to form solidarity between the women in the local villages. We were invited down to their shop, which is in a cave, just off from where we were doing the workshop. In this cool little dark cave, many purses and scarves and beautiful items were hanging for sale, as well as snacks. We had a conversation inside, and I recorded a little bit of it. Here you go.
كيف انتو بتشعروا انه هذا الاشي بيقوي المرأة وانه بيساعدها؟
يعني بيساعدنا يعني بعطينا لو اشي بسيط بعطي احنا عنا قوة بس بزيد القوة. يعني منكون مع بعضنا يعني مترابطين. من كل منطقة يعني النساء. في شغلنا. في رأينا. في اشياء كثير. ناخذ رأي بعضنا في أشياء. نتعاون مع بعضنا. مع بعضنا.
وليش هذا الإشي يعني إيش هو الإشي الفرق اللي هذا عم بعنه؟ تضامن. وإيش هذا التضامن اللي عم
بعمل هذا التضامن؟ بعطينا قوة، بعطينا ال مش عارف شو بدي أحكي يعني. بعطينا أشياء كثيرة يعني. رأينا حق المرأة يعني.
تشعر المرأة
أنا
سويت. تشتغل لحالها يعني.
يعني شخصيتنا يعني مستقلة. حس حالنا بنعمل إشي.
It gives them solidarity. They feel like they're doing something. It gives them women right, and they feel it by doing so.
Does their relationship with men change?
هل علاقتكم مع الرجال تغيرت لما عملتوا هن؟
لا هم بيدعمونا بهذا الإشي. بيحبوا إنه نعمل أشياء أنا بدعمونا في كل إشي يعني ما بيعملوا شيء يعني رجال
نعمل
نسوي نعطش عليه هاو ما هي ماخذين الفكرة عن المرأة إنها يعني
the women are free here.
Uh-huh. The night that we slept in Susia, I did anything but sleep. I was kept up by the thought of our group being there, doing work and making relationships while the group across the hill was trying to provoke us and in fact did in the end. I literally couldn't sleep as holding an image of our group standing in a line and settlers standing in a line across the hill, and that really did happen in the morning. And then I started to think about how hospitable everyone was and how sweet, and the fact that the building I was sleeping in could get demolished at any time. And that's the reality that people live with here. Whether they're in East Jerusalem or any part of the West Bank or Gaza, you can wake up to soldiers, to bulldozers, police. So being back in Jerusalem is a bit eerie. We're back in the comfort of our homes with our running water and electricity and no threat of demolition, just having to pay rent. Going forward, the idea is to go back to Susia and continue the relationship and try to hold more events like this, but to also write and put out as much information as we can about Susia. In the meantime, not forget about the other villages, families, and houses that have no one to represent them. I think all that's left is hoping to form relationships with more places. So share the story, find more articles, share them, talk about it. Thanks for listening. Hope you join me next time. Bye.